Hey, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, friends and colleagues of all ages? What the heck is that even all about? I don't know. Whoever you are, you've done it again, and you've pushed the play button on yet another...
Another Logorrhea episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Logorrhea?
Yes, sir. That is an overselling adjective, and it means uncontrollable talkativeness.
Oh, wow. Sounds like my intro. I'm not sure where I was going, but it was uncontrollable talkativeness. Right on. Well, this is V8 Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, joined, as always, by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Ubal-Clark.
What's a good word, my man?
Well, whatever that word you just said.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah. I have another good word, too, that...
Tell me.
Might get into later on. Rhynchocephalian.
Rhynchostelian.
Rhynchocephalian.
Rhynchocephalian, excuse
yes,
me.
Yes.
I stand corrected. That's
yeah.
That sounds very intriguing, and we must hit upon that.
Yeah. Well, before we do,
oh, yes.
We're going to have a tease before the tease. That was pretty good.
Oh.
For those who listen to this show with any regularity, know that... We offer up a series of trivia questions in which they're usually automotive related, and we throw these at each other, and then you can play along at home or in the car or wherever you might be listening, and the answers are revealed at the end of the show. So, Mike, did you prepare a trivia question?
Indeed I did, Kevin. Indeed I did. And this question...
Is it an easy one, I hope?
It's easy if you know it.
Mm-hmm.
This question comes courtesy of one Trevelyan Alistair Spence.
Oh, no.
Shop foreman of the V8 Speed and Resto Shop and all-around solid guy.
Yeah, except for this part.
Except for this part. Sorry, Trev, you're about to get demoted. Mm. All right, here we go. So, Kevin... Speaking of EFI, what year was EFI first available on a U.S. car, and what brand was it? And for the bonus, how many were made?
That is a great question. So a factory-installed electronic fuel injection system in an American car. Now, was available in the U.S. or
yes,
made in the U.S.?
Available in the U.S.,
but not necessarily made in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, that's inconsequential.
Right.
It is.
Okay. I mean, if they're one and the same, if it's an American-built car.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's where I'm going. Because I know, you know, Mercedes-Benz had some Bosch Jetronic stuff in the 60s, and you know, Japan had some Nippon Denso things at different times.
Mm-hmm.
But from an American car standpoint, what was the first EFI application? Okay, so I know that in the 70s, Cadillac had a system available.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also pretty sure that way back in the 50s, there was a Chrysler product, maybe a DeSoto or a Chrysler that offered a very limited run electric type fuel injection.
What?
So that would be an E also. That I don't remember what particular car it was on, but I'm going to say it was 1958.
Uh-huh.
And they did not make many, so I'm going to say less than 100 for my guess.
You said
but a 58 Chrysler.
Chrysler and less than 100.
Than 100. That's kind of where I'm going.
Hmm.
I know I've seen...
That's a cool guess.
Yeah, and it was kind of, if I remember all this correctly, which there is no guarantee, by the way, remembering this in any form of reality.
Right on.
But I remember being shocked by the time frame, saying, really? They had that then? Because General Motors, of course, Chevrolet and Pontiac had their ramjet fuel injection.
Right. But that was mechanical fuel injection.
It was
right?
Mechanical, right. Yeah. It wasn't electronic. So I believe Chrysler whipped something together, and it didn't work very well, and it didn't stay. But that time period, there was all kinds of electronic innovations. The OEs were doing whatever they could to throw electronics in cars and make them futuristic. And, you know, Cadillac had the self-leveling air ride suspension back then, and, and the Autronic Eye, and Twilight Sentinel headlights that dimmed on oncoming cars and all that stuff.
We talked about the Autronic Eye.
Yes, we have. So that's my guess. Not saying it's right, but
so Kevin says 1958 Chrysler, less than 100, duly noted, sir.
All right.
All right.
Okay, so my question to you might be a repeat.
Come on, and if it is, I'm the only one that's allowed to do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember.
Okay.
I need Yardley to break out the grid with all the trivia questions.
Yeah, we need the spreadsheet.
Yeah. So I'm just going to throw it out there, and my presumption is if I forgot, maybe you did too.
It's very likely.
And we'll just act like it's new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you recall yesterday, maybe? Maybe it was today. I think it was yesterday. I sent you a text of a picture of a very interesting looking Mercury.
Yes, you did.
It was kind of green with steel wheels and red lines. And
It was great looking.
Yeah. Well, on that particular body style, the rear window sloped inwards towards the cabin at the base, kind of the opposite direction that a rear window normally slopes. So it's kind of like the opposite of a fastback. Uh-huh. Why did it do that, and what was it called?
Well, Kevin, this is a repeat question.
And do you remember it?
I remember the question.
Right, so it's news to me.
I think.
Dice on that one.
Yeah, well, you're a good gambler. You know your subject well. That I do remember us discussing that, and that being a question. I'm gonna say because that window retracted into the car and it needed the room. It had to be tilted that way to retract fully.
It retracted
and it was called the Great Retractable Window by Mercury.
Wow, what an amazing name for a great.
Oh my goodness.
Retractable.
I mean, you handed it to me on a silver platter, and I still knocked it all out of your hand.
By Mercury.
By Mercury.
Of course. Excellent.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it.
Is that your final answer?
That's, unfortunately, yes.
Well, very good.
Yeah.
We'll find out later in the show, ladies and gentlemen. Or if you get bored, you can tune into maybe episode 12 or something, I don't know, and get the answer.
Yeah, Yardley, when was that episode? Oh my goodness. That was unbelievable. I can't believe I couldn't remember that.
Well, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
So,
Anyway. You've been a busy boy.
I have. And before I get too far off course, I wanted to touch on a rhynchocephalian. Rhynchocephalian is the it was the species from which the Tuatara evolved.
The Tuatara.
Yes. And the Tuatara, of course, is kind of like a lizard.
Okay.
And also the name of the current fastest production car in the world. Did you see it?
Ooh.
You see the video came out 2 days ago? So there's
I didn't see the video, but I saw like a thumbnail of it, but I didn't click on it like an idiot.
Shelby Supercars, which is not related to Carroll Shelby in any way. Another gentleman named Jared Shelby has this company called Shelby Supercars, SSC, and they created a vehicle called the Tuatara. And on an open road in Nevada between Vegas and Pahrump, which is a great stretch of highway, I've driven it before, they laid down an average there and back of 316 miles an hour.
Good heavens.
Just obliterating the Koenigsegg and the Bugatti Chiron.
Oh, man.
Which had the previous records of 304 and 285 or so. And the crazy thing is, it averaged 316. One run, they hit 331.
Good heavens.
And the thing was still pulling. If you watch the video, the guy gets out of it because it starts to get a crosswind.
Wow.
But you're like, oh, no, there's plenty more in this thing. So who knows what the top speed's going to be.
Wow.
But the car, it looks like a, you know, like a jet fighter without wings, named after this crazy lizard kind of thing, which also, you know, in some ways has a little resemblance, kind of a pointy nose. And it's a flat plane, 4.9 liter, 1,750 horsepower, turbocharged V8, custom design. I don't know enough Whoa. About the lineage of the engine.
Right.
Claimed to be custom design. And, you know, a couple million bucks and you can have one. But, but congrats to them for doing that. This is street legal, full lights, full everything.
That is amazing.
It's unbelievable.
It is. I think a few people at Koenigsegg and Volkswagen just got fired.
Or they got the gauntlet thrown right there in their...
Right. Beat that.
In their plate of sauerkraut because they...
Perfect.
Because the heat just got turned up quite a bit, and the whole thing's American, so that's very cool.
I can't... Good heavens.
Yeah, so go seek out that video. It's everywhere. If you just type in Tuatara, T-U-A-T-A-R-A, and watch it, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, there was so much more left in that thing. So,
oh, yeah,
super cool.
Is. This small American car company now has the world's fastest car, 316 miles an hour. Take a look.
And the video, they did it in like a minute and a half, too. I mean, it wasn't very long to go like 0 to 331.
Oh,
yeah.
I wonder how much ground that covered on that run.
I don't know.
Probably like 10 miles, I wonder. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. So that's exciting. Always
that is
good
exciting.
To hear new exciting stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. But yes, to answer your question, I have been pretty busy the past couple of weeks. It's been really, really cool, doing a lot of travel, doing some video work, some production work, some live event stuff, some media stuff. You pick which one do we start with?
Let's talk about the media stuff.
Right on. So here's one that I don't even know. Yeah, I guess we talked about this. Prior to the show, but one of our customers has a pretty interesting 1967 Mustang.
Right.
And it's interesting because it's like not a big block car. It's not a pro touring car. It's not a one of one.
Right.
It's just kind of
it's a cool car.
It's a cool car, but it's also... very representative of somebody who went into a Ford dealer and just bought a Mustang in 67. So it's a 289 air conditioning car. It's kind of a slate. I forgot the actual name of the color. Tan with a white vinyl top.
Right.
Deluxe interior, automatic. But our friends at Hemmings Classic Car wanted to do a story featuring... like cars that today we see as classics, but when they were new, they were just bought to be cars.
Mm-hmm.
This was just somebody's car. And it's a Survivor. It's been repainted once, and our shop has done a little bit of maintenance on it. But it's really, you know, it's just a car. So this was a perfect candidate. So they contacted me. Terry McGeehan over at Hemmings contacted me and said, hey, do you think you can help us out with a photo shoot on that and hook us up with the owner? So I shot a photo spread of that car cruising down some country roads near our shop. Our buddy Grady was the camera car driver. He was driving my Galaxy convertible.
Nice.
And it was
right on Grady.
Yeah, it was really nice to shoot out of because that thing's super smooth. And and that's cool. It's been a little while since I've shot a magazine feature, so it's fun to do that. The owner was very excited. The other cool thing about the car, and this is also interesting, it's been owned by women since day one.
Is that right? I'll be darned.
And I think a very short period of time, our current owner's dad had it. But by and large, it's been a female-owned car. And Terry and I were kind of marveling at that, going, oh, that's very interesting. But then it dawned on me that that was kind of the market the Mustang was going for in the first place.
Right.
So
exactly.
It worked, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's going to touch on that in the magazine story, because today, you know, you don't want to offend anybody. And
right. I mean, but
it's not offensive, but it's just...
Yeah, it's not. That's what it was marketed to. It was marketed towards women. It was
right.
A different time back then, and that's... I wanted women to buy cars, too.
Yeah, and cool cars.
Yeah.
So that was fun. So that's a little bit of some of the media work that I've been doing.
Right on.
Doing some other video stuff for the SEMA 360 experience.
Yeah, man. That's some cool stuff.
That was very cool. So last week, once again, this is all in the past week, by the way.
Right.
That we're talking about. After that photo shoot, a couple days later, jumped on an airplane and flew to Burbank, California to go do a shoot for a SEMA in a cyclorama, a big green screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a 360-degree cyc. It was like at least a 180. But the SEMA 360 online experience has a website you go to if you're in the industry and you're registered. And when you get there, you can click on a whole variety of different elements that make up kind of, you know, the big parts of the SEMA show. They're in no way trying to replace the SEMA show with this, but they wanted to have an outlet for manufacturers to show off new products and builders to show off new cars that they worked on and educational seminars and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we shot video intros for a whole bunch of those.
Cool.
And the video welcome to the whole SEMA 360 platform, which was cool, and did it in this virtual set. And if you didn't know, you probably wouldn't know.
You are absolutely right. You sent me some raw videos and some green screen stuff and some process stuff. And that looked legit. I thought you were in that big office, that big open area shooting.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. And not that green screen technology is anything new, but
right.
What was really cool about this one is it was all real time. So
right.
In the past, you would shoot your subject on a green screen, you'd light them and monkey around, and then afterwards you take that video and you go in your editing software and you composite the background out of the shot,
mm-hmm.
using some chroma key or color keying techniques, and you can tweak it a little bit to make the edges look nice, and sometimes you have to add a little purple frame to the subject so that the computer can make the difference between where the human subject ends and the green screen starts and all that stuff.
Okay.
You know, just because of optics and, you know, all that kind of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And they had told me, they're like, yeah, don't wear anything green, you know, because then you'll have a hole in your chest if you have a green shirt on or, you know, whatever. We've all seen bad chroma key.
Mm-hmm.
But this one did not only a background, but a background real time to where it did not need that post-production processing. And mm-hmm. It was all motion track 3D. So you can do a still background, like you watch the weatherman at night, they're standing in front of a still.
Oh, right.
Weather map. And mm-hmm. That renders real time. There's no trick there,
mm-hmm.
But this set, you know, so we've got cameras on jibs that are flying around and I'm walking towards the camera, away from the camera, it's moving by. And the background was looking out over the Las Vegas Strip,
mm-hmm.
And the buildings are moving with the
you.
Elements in the foreground. Yeah. And with me and everything in a really convincing 3D space that was being rendered real time. So it was really, really cool to see it done.
That is cool. And I can't wait to see the rest of them because, as you know, I am registered for SEMA 360. And because I am an industry guy all day,
yeah.
I'll be checking it out.
I would expect nothing less. You know, I'm surprised they didn't call and invite you. You know,
well, I might not have been home. They may have called. But,
I'm sure.
Ira, I got your call.
Yes. You're an industry guy.
That's right, man.
So, yeah, cool. So that day we shot, like I said, the intro, the close. We shot the intros for the educational seminar. So when you go to the SEMA 360 site and click on an educational thing, you'll see this little intro first, kind of telling you what the course is going to be about and mm-hmm. whatnot. And Chris Kersting, the CEO of SEMA, was there giving an intro speech as well, as along with Tim Martin, who's the chairman of the board, mm-hmm. and Jared DeAnda, who I was fortunate enough to co-host the SEMA banquet last year. He was there.
And, oh, right.
And we shot some elements of that as well. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much of this I can give away yet, but that kind of stuff was done. And one of the coolest things is we had a band on stage.
Right on.
In our virtual stage. And you'll just kind of have to see it to see how it plays out. But
Yeah.
And it was a band called Patrick and the LVB, the Las Vegas band. And they were the house band last year at the actual SEMA show in reality.
Oh, so wow.
So we worked with them in the past. Tremendous band, super cool guys, really, really a lot of fun. So, yes.
Yeah, man, you get to do so much cool stuff. That's great.
That was cool. Yeah. I got to admit, that was a lot of fun. And mm-hmm. it was fun because the crew was solid and, you know, everybody kind of had their stuff together and we were able to get in and do our thing and not be mired down with problems. Everybody kind of knew mm-hmm. what we had to do. We had this SEMA, I guess, had rented this facility for a day, this the studio.
Right.
And it was pretty cool. And I'm, you know, I used to live in Southern California. I've been around a whole bunch of this stuff. One thing kind of caught me off guard. I tried to do this as easily and cheaply as possible. So I flew into the Burbank airport and I got an Uber ride to a hotel, and the hotel was literally across the street from the studio. I planned this out so that I didn't have to rent a car or anything. And I walk out of the hotel, and it's a little side of the road motel, you know, and, mm-hmm. and there's a diner in front called Frank's Diner, which has been in like 50 different TV shows and movies.
Has it?
You know, as a diner scene. And they got this, they got still pictures in the window of all the different, you know, shows that they've been in. And I was like, oh, I've seen that. Oh, yeah, right. I watched that. You know, that was pretty cool. So, I mean, what kind of moron gets starstruck by a diner? But, you know, this guy. And, of course, it wasn't open that day, so I didn't even get a chance to eat there.
But, man, you know, I was going to ask you how the food was. Ah, gee whiz.
It looked great.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. In the pictures, it looked fabulous.
Yeah, if you watch the last season of the TV show Scorpion, you could see what the food looked like.
All right, groovy. So now you're all done with what you were shooting for, but you were, God dang it. All right, we're going to edit
sure.
that. You're all done with all your.
you can leave it in. Everybody got it.
Louise, what is wrong with me today? But all your shooting is finished for SEMA, correct?
Or do you have to go back? Not correct.
No.
So everything that was done in that studio setting is done. But when SEMA 360 actually goes live during the week of the SEMA show, mm-hmm. I'll be doing a daily update.
Oh, cool.
For SEMA 360, but shot in our shop.
Oh, right on.
So it'll be easy to do, local.
Sure.
I'll be wearing the SEMA garb. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to kind of tap into the data of what happened as people were using the SEMA 360 portal mm-hmm. and check out some of the new product releases and, you know, maybe kick off the schedule of some of the things that are going to mm-hmm. be happening that day and do that every day of the week throughout SEMA week.
Nice. You have to be sure to have the V8 Speed and Resto logo prominently displayed during your updates.
I don't know. We might be able to work that in somewhere. I've been labeled as a SEMA ambassador in the video. So, I mean, I'm working for them doing this project. So, mm-hmm. But we were able to slip in that logo on the hype video for SEMA 360.
Right.
I don't know if you saw it, but online it starts with a shot of the laptop, And it was a shot that they actually called me to do. So I did the shot of the laptop in the front and then leaving at the very end. And you could see the V8 logo in the background, along with a 63 Chrysler and a 78 Trans Am.
Perfect. The only thing missing was the V8 radio logo.
That's right. Maybe that's the one I'll work in there.
Yeah, right? Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Well, you know, that'd be a good way to, you know, start the update. I could be listening with some headphones, you know, and holding the... The Apple Podcast logo with V8 radio on my phone up to the camera and go, oh, I didn't notice you there.
I didn't see you there.
Right. While you were all doing SEMA stuff, I was listening to V8 radio.
Yeah, your phone will ring in mid-update with Ira saying, knock it off.
That's not what he's going to say. He's going to say, you're fired. So, yeah, there is more to come on that. And that program's coming together. I mean, everybody was kind of concerned about, you know, the absence of the show and is anybody going to participate. And I think the last count, they had over 600 companies that are registered. And when you register as an exhibitor, you got to use those same terms, but think of it differently. You get this, you get a page, you get a web space, and you get to upload your own products or your own vehicles or your own video, whatever you would have been bringing to the actual show. You get to put in your SEMA 360 space, and then other media people, buyers, sellers, they'll get to kind of go through and click on stuff as they like, and then the media people can share those items through their respective media outlets.
That's cool.
So, yeah. And I think they've got over, I know we were cleared to say 1,500 new products last week, but I've been told that a significant amount additional have been added, like at least another 500, I think. So you're looking at, you know, a couple thousand new products, and there is a pretty cool networking function of this site. It's basically a whole social network that they've built, where you can kind of click on people's profiles and connect and do business. So we're all really excited to see it happen.
That's great. I mean, it's a real testament to how adaptable these companies can be in the face of this pandemic and still be able to get their products out. And it's great that SEMA can facilitate all of that, so these people can continue to do business and grow their businesses. So that's big hats off to SEMA for that.
Yeah. And what I find interesting is talking to a lot of these manufacturers, you know, everybody is busy. So
that's great.
It is great.
I love it.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily relying on this SEMA 360 experience to like swoop in and save the year. You know, there's not like a high pressure for all this as a last ditch effort before you go under. I mean, I think a lot of these companies, this is just supplemental and it's an additional networking, and it's going to be good. It's going to be very cool.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
It's cool that you get to be a big part of that. So right on. Good for you.
It is. Thank you. I'm very fortunate. So after Burbank was off to Scottsdale for the Off-Road Expo and Sand Sports Super Show, which was combining two off-road shows that are normally in Southern California and moving them to Scottsdale at the Westworld facility, which is where Barrett Jackson is held.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah, because California would not allow these gatherings to happen. And that's owned by the Bonnier Corporation. And they said, you know what? Let's see if we can just move this down the road a bit and have a show. So the crazy thing there is that it turned out to be too successful for its own good.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's another one where people were a little bit nervous. You know, some of the exhibitors that had been signed up in California were like, you know, you're going to make us go to a different state. It wasn't really last minute, but it wasn't part of the year-long plan. And, you know, is anybody going to attend this thing? The local crowd's not expecting it. They're not used to it. And they just, you know, as soon as a few people signed up, I guess a few more signed up. And at the end of the day, they had over 160 exhibitors, I think. Wow. So it was a huge turnout of exhibitors for this type of event. And it was everything from off-road wheels, tires, suspension parts, illumination, apparel, associations, side-by-sides, UTVs, ATVs, power adders, you know, ARP was there with Brian Crower, you know, because Brian Crower is now doing forged crankshafts for you know, Polaris ATVs and stuff.
Wow.
Because these people are doing crazy things with these side-by-sides and UTVs to the tune of running a one-liter engine. Well, I got a chance to interview Robbie Gordon. And Robbie has his own brand of high performance. I guess it's a UTV. I believe it's a two place and a four place, but it's 999 CCs, and the stock version makes like 300 horsepower.
Holy shnikes!
And it comes with the magic key where you can, if you purchase an additional package, you just use this key and it kicks the boost up and it changes the ECM program, and now the thing's making like 550.
Oh my god, what does it weigh, 800 pounds?
Yeah, like nothing. Exactly.
Good heavens.
And Robbie Gordon's, of course, is all hand spec engineered. It's a fairly production piece that regular people can buy, but other people are doing, you know, they're trying to get as much power as they can out of the Polaris Razor, you know, whatever. So they're breaking a lot of parts because they're putting turbos on them and putting a lot of boost, and so there's a whole, you know, high performance market that's beyond just shocks and tires for these things, although the shock and spring technology's gone through the roof too. And Rockford Fosgate's there. Rockford makes like
nice
pre-made audio systems for these that fit the speaker holes and everything automatically. You don't have to make anything anymore.
Unbelievable.
So a bunch of top level companies were there. And the other question was, is any participants going to attend, any spectators going to come to this thing? Because Arizona's been on lockdown since February. You know, they haven't really fully opened up. So the story that I was told is that the West World facility was told they could have 6,500 people, I think, by Scottsdale police. And 6,500 seemed like, you know, maybe kind of a stretch for something like this. They're hoping, you know, they got 1,500, 2,000. You know, hope anybody shows up. Don't really know. And I think by 1:30 or 2 p.m., they were forced to close the doors and not allow anybody else in.
Holy,
because they had over 7,000 on site.
Jeez.
And they had another 1,500 people in line.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And those people, unfortunately, never got a chance to come in because the city's like, nope, you can't let anybody else in. And then the event was supposed to be Saturday and Sunday. And on Sunday, the whole thing, the Scottsdale cops came in and said, nope, it's closed. There will be no event on Sunday.
Whoa. Oh, man.
Because of masks and social distancing. And it wasn't even so much the participants. I mean, there was people with no masks.
Yeah.
I was impressed. A lot of people had masks. But it was also some of the vendors weren't wearing masks. And, you know, a lot of them, I think, were just way overwhelmed by how many people were there that they were just kind of hustling and shuffling. And
sure.
And they failed to pay attention to it. And it ended up...
Yeah, the mask was an afterthought to them.
Right.
Well, my God, it almost sounds like Bonnie Air found a new location for this event. Sounds like it's pretty popular in Arizona.
Well, the feedback that I got from a lot of people, I was working the stage and playing music and doing announcements and interviews and stuff. And many people were like, you know, we were just so happy to get out and do something. That it was definitely right place at the right time.
Sure.
But it was a good show. There was a lot to offer, a lot to see, a lot to buy, a lot of good deals. There were those who complained because they're like, you know, the parking was a mess and the lines took too long. So we were just telling them that, you know, You're right, because it was, oh, we got steamrolled, you know, yeah, by the amount of people, and it was, again, combining the SanSports Super Show and the Off-Road Expo into one event, so you've got that logistics, then you've got moving it to a different city, then you've got a city that they've never exhibited in, then you've got COVID on top of that, and it was like, the event really relied on the staff of the Westworld facility to kind of keep this stuff running smoothly because they got hired to do it. Mm-hmm. But those guys hadn't done an event this year either. So they were out of practice. And
sure.
So there was many things that could be smoothed out.
Yeah.
Should they go back? And I hope they do.
But despite all the hurdles, it sounds like it was a pretty successful event though.
Right. Like I said, it was too successful for its own good at this point because it was just pretty overwhelming all the way across the board. But I had fun.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
you know how to have fun.
Well, I got I had a sweet deal. I had a nice stage with a shade over the top and a nice little breeze and we had some good music to play and talked to a lot of cool people.
Well, you're doing what you're good at. You're doing what you love. So what's not to like?
That's it, man.
Yeah, man. You don't work a day in your life.
Right. Actually, today was the first day then.
Right on. Yeah, so, if only that were the case. Oh,
right.
Boy.
No, I'm not complaining about nothing. I am very fortunate to be able to do this stuff and work in the shop and do everything else. I mean, my headaches are nothing compared to many people. So, yeah. Very fortunate.
You put up a pretty cool pic today of a bunch of birds in the shop.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the aviary that is the VH Speed and Resto shop.
Yeah. Well, again, I guess birds of a feather kind of flock together, right? I just walked out of the office and looked in the front mechanics shop, and that particular room holds four cars, and there was two black Trans Ams next to each other, and then across from that was the white and blue 70 Trans Am we're working on, which is an amazing car.
Yeah.
And then next to that was a different kind of bird, but a 55 Thunderbird.
Ah.
And then I didn't allude to it in that picture, but if you look closely, you'll see the limelight green of the car that's becoming a Superbird.
Ooh.
As well.
Is that so?
So we got lots of birds in the shop, and there's a whole bunch more that aren't in that picture, but the one really cool thing I noticed as well is those two black Trans Ams. One is a 77 Trans Am SE car, and the other is a 79. Mm-hmm. And they're both T-top cars. But now, for the first time, I have two identical appearing cars that have the two different styles of T-tops that were available.
Is that right? That's cool.
So one has the Hurst Hatch
T-tops,
and the other one's got the, I forgot if it was ASE or Libby Owens Ford or whatever the GM ones were on the 79. So we're going to do a video showing the differences because they are radically different.
Dig it. Very cool. Very cool. Can't wait for that.
Most people don't ever get a chance to see those next to each other to see the difference. But, you know, it's kind of trivial, but it's cool.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's super cool. Yeah, that that car that's going to turn into a Superbird is going to be super cool.
Yeah, that's a neat one. So it's going through its third identity crisis.
Is that right?
Yeah, because it was born a satellite, and then it got cloned to a GTX, and now we're going to kick it up to a Superbird. We just got the fiberglass nose and all the glass pieces. Originally, the nose was aluminum and steel, but this one is going to be glass. But the rear wing is actually cast aluminum and machined, and so that's still in the mail, but all of the side scoops and the underpinnings and all the rest of the pieces have arrived. And good thing it came with a manual. There's a lot of stuff there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I believe it.
That will be a neat one to follow along, because I think we're going to do a manual conversion on that and gear change and a repaint and a bunch of cool stuff. So
cool. Do we know what color?
I'm not sure yet. It's either going to be a repaint of the same color, or it's going to do a color change to maybe hemi orange, possibly.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All those right high on. Impact colors, though. They're all super cool.
Vitamin C orange. Isn't that what they called it?
Vitamin C was the Plymouth color.
Plymouth. Okay. So that would be the.
So I guess it would be vitamin C. The Dodge was hemi orange. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But I have another kind of a interesting story that I'm not sure how this all happened. But a couple weeks ago, I think you and I may have talked about it, but we had a car in the shop, a 72 Pontiac Le Mans GT.
Mm, yes.
White with the blue stripes on it.
Yeah.
And we showed a picture of our new alignment rack with this car on it. And we dropped a few snapshots here and there. And it's a 350 car. With a four barrel on it, and it had been restored, almost all the way, and the customer wanted some updates to it, and it's a very nice driving car, and it's cool. It came out pretty well. So I got to kind of walk the line here, because I dig the car. I'm not sure who knows what. Okay, I'm just going to kind of leave it there.
Okay,
but I thought, you know, you never see these Le Mans GTs, so maybe it'd be cool to do a Muscle Car of the Week video on it. So we shoot a video on the car, and I'm doing some research, and I learned that they made like 6,500 Le Mans GTs or 8,700, something like that, in 1972. And the GT package could be added on to any of the V8 Le Mans cars, 352 barrel, all the way up to the very rare convertible 455 HO four-speed that they made two of.
Oh, wow.
And this one was a 350 car that had a four-barrel conversion on it. And the engine's been rebuilt, so it's got a really nice cam in it, and it's got some good parts. It drives great, you know. And we put some tubular Global West control arms on it and a better disc brake and whatnot. Cool. So I remember when the car came in that I Googled Le Mans GT, and I saw a white one with the blue stripes and some other kind of designs and stuff. And I just kind of put that in the back of my mind. And then a couple weeks ago, when it's time to do the video on this one, I'm trying to learn about it. So I'm reading the original Pontiac brochure, and it talks about the Le Mans GT package, which is a 14-inch rally two-wheel. Raised white letter tires, the stripe,
right,
and
badging and all that.
Yeah, and I think a sway bar up front.
Okay.
And it was kind of the carryover from the T37.
Right, yeah.
Right?
So kind of familiar with that, yeah.
A non-GTO GTO.
Right.
It was, you know, had the performance, but not all the rest of the nonsense.
Right.
And I'm looking in the brochure, and the stripe is different. So a lot of these cars had multiple stripe options. So I mentioned my friend Terry McGeehan earlier at Hemmings. I shoot Terry a text and called him, actually, and said, hey, what was the name of the other stripe package on the Le Mans GT? And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, we've got one of the white ones that has the blue stripe that's got the word Le Mans GT on the side, and the hood has the word Le Mans GT cut out of the hood. And he said, yeah, no.
No.
And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, there's only one stripe package, and it's this full-length belt line stripe, and it's like a tape thing, and they came in like two colors, and that's what the Le Mans GT stripe is. I don't know. I'm not familiar with what you have. And I said, well, I know I've seen these cars online in this same exact design, so I know it's a thing, but I can't really find the info. And this is where it starts to get a little strange.
Okay.
So I start Googling and looking around, and I see here's the white car that I saw, right? And it's white and blue, just like the one that I'm looking at in our own shop. Well, it turns out that the car that I'm looking at on screen was a what-if creation.
Oh, really?
So a couple individuals in Southern California decided to take a regular Le Mans, and they went to a designer and said, well, what if Pontiac made a thing called the Le Mans GT in 72 and painted it blue and white? What would it look like? So the guys who did the car basically designed their own period correct looking stripe package, painted the whole car solid white, blue stripe, whatever. And whoever my customer bought his car from cloned that one.
Get out of here.
Right? So there's two in the world. One is a fantasy car done in California. The other one in my shop is a copy of the fantasy car.
Oh, my God.
It gets weirder. So who owns the real one, the first yeah. one, the first fantasy?
The real fantasy, yeah.
Randy Lorenzen, my buddy, the photographer.
Get out of here.
And his son, yeah.
Stop Sean. It.
Yeah, no, for real. And they did a thing with Hot Rod, or Popular Hot Rodding, on taking a base model muscle car and adding some zip to it. So theirs actually started off as what was called a luxury Le Mans, which you're probably familiar with.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, was like the paisley seat covers and wheel skirts. And
yeah, exactly.
And a 350, and they beefed it up and had this paint job done.
That is unreal, man.
So I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're kidding me, right? So whoever did the one that we have. So I text Randy. I said, you still got the car? And he's like, yeah, why? And I sent him a picture of this one. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. Somebody cloned my fake car.
Wow.
Randy proceeds to tell me that he's like, people come up to me all the time saying, oh, dude, I remember the Le Mans GT. You know, this is great. Well, it gets a little bit stranger still, because I'm not sure Randy knows that there was an actual Le Mans GT. It just mm-hmm. didn't look like his.
Right.
Because he keeps kind of blowing it off. He's like, yeah, right, whatever, Le Mans GT. You know, we just kind of made that up. Well, you made up a car that exists. You just changed the look of it.
Changed, yeah.
And again, I've got the one that's copied from that.
The copied fake car.
Right. So Terry and I are laughing about this, thinking, oh my gosh, you know. So I said, well, what I should have done from the first minute is look at the trim tag and the VIN. Mm. I don't think the Le Mans GT was visible in the trim tag. Which is why I never really bothered to look at it mm-hmm. to verify it, you know, because I just think it was a sticker package and whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a model, you know, separate
like
model.
Like an option.
Right. And so usually the trim tag will show, you know, if it's a Camaro, it'll show if it's a Z28 or if it's, you know, whatever. But I don't think the Le Mans GT package was significant enough to warrant its own code on the trim tag. So I go out in the shop and I look at the trim tag. And sure enough, this one started off as a luxury Le Mans as well.
Get out of town. Good heavens.
It was green and a green interior.
Oh, wow. That's too much. Too much.
It's crazy. So of the two in the world, I got, you know, I know the one guy and the other one's in my shop.
And they were both luxury Le Mans.
Yes. And they're twins now. They're identical. I mean, there's some very subtle differences, you know, in the way that the stripes are laid out. And we all had a big laugh about this, except when I prefaced the story, I said, I don't know who knows what. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the owner knows.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if he... I mean, a Le Mans GT package isn't going to... It's not the same as a, you know, 455 HO, 4-speed GTO.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
Not a significant value enhancer if you have one of the Le Mans GTs, especially ones that was built as a 350 car. They made a whole bunch of those. But I know the owner really likes this car and thinks that there is some significance there.
Hmm. Well, there kind of is.
Well, now there kind of is.
Yeah, now that we know what he may not know, there is significance. Right.
So, I don't know. And he was all excited because I told him we're going to do a video on the car and everything. And and we shot the video, but it's not what we thought. So, the video topic is going to change a little bit to just be a kind of a just a owner spotlight of kind of a neat car.
Okay.
I don't know that we can tell this whole story in a video. Right. We might be able to truncate it quite a bit and say this is a tribute of a
exercise. Yeah, exactly. A tribute of an exercise. That sounds weird.
It's the craziest thing. I've never had something like this happen. We've all had, you know, Legotes, you know, Le Mans converted into a GTO or whatever. And that's just like, you just kind of dismiss those. Or you might say this was nicely done, you know, whatever. Not trying to pass it off as something and take people's extra money for it or anything.
Right.
But in this case, there's something neat about that story.
It's a great story. Are you kidding me?
And
it should be told.
Terry pointed out that, you know, we often take for granted the power of these magazines. And here's an example of how powerful they are. You know, somebody read the book and was moved enough to create their own version of the car that they saw.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
How long has Randy Lorenz owned it?
I think they did theirs 3 or 4 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah. And if you go to hotrod.com and just type in Le Mans GT, you'll see the whole story of how they laid the stripes out. And you can read. And that was the other thing. I'm reading that story as they're building this car, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. They're like, we're creating this mythical Le Mans GT. And I thought, well, do these guys not know that there is Le Mans GT?
Yeah,
because they never mentioned the actual car. You would think they would have like a promo shot of what one of the real ones looked like with the stripe on it.
Right.
The Beltline stripe. But they're like, nah, ha, ha, we're doing this because it's fun. And this was a cheap car. We're just having a good time with it, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
So McGean's like, only you, man. I don't know how you guys end up in these type of situations, but sure, here you are.
That's awesome. Mm. That is awesome. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm looking at hotrod.com trying to find this.
You'll see it.
Yeah, I'll dig at it later.
Maybe we can organize the Le Mans GT Nationals and have the two, you know, unicorn cars both appear. And see who knows what.
No, I did the stripe like this first. No, I did.
Or my uncle bought one of those new in 72. Yeah, that's the one that Randy gets all the time.
Well, how long is the owner of the copy of the Fable car?
I don't know. I'm going to say a couple of years.
Is that
year
right?
And a half, maybe. Yeah. And like I said, he loves the car. And I don't want to do anything to diminish his enjoyment of this car.
Right.
But I don't know that this story.
So he may think he has a legit Le Mans GT.
He might. I don't know.
Well, it's on him when he bought the car to do his due diligence to find out exactly what he's buying.
Sure. Well, I actually found the for sale ad from when he bought this car.
Oh, yeah.
And the ad says numbers matching and things that would lead you to believe that it is
it's authentic.
Authentic. And I guess it is authentic because it is a numbers matching luxury Le Mans, you know, that was just repainted differently. But the whole interior was changed out. It's got buckets. I mean, they went all the way to the fantasy finish line, I guess.
The fantasy finish line. I love it.
But it's a great car. I drove it. I'm like, this is really nice. It drives wonderfully. Tons of torque. Hard to believe it's a 350 when you drive it.
Is that right?
Yeah. They must have done some head work in there. And they it's got a cam and electronic ignition and a better carburetor, four-barrel intake, AC, buckets, power steering, killer brakes. I mean, it's very, very nice.
Nice, man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Are you going to break it to him? Are you going to talk to him about it?
I don't. I feel I have to, but I don't know.
I don't know how to. I think you should start out by asking him what he knows about it.
All right. Let's role play.
Okay.
You get a phone call from a shop, and they say, Mike, how much do you know about this GTO?
Not like that.
Well, how do you do it, you know?
Well, you say, we really like the car, and we want to hear your story about it. I mean, what do you know about it? What did you find out?
Oh, it's Le Mans GT, man. I love this car.
What kind of research have you done on it? Something like that. Something along those lines.
I'm halfway expecting well, I was hoping you could tell me something cool about the car.
Okay. Well, as a matter of fact, I can.
Have a seat. Well, but at the same time, it did not just go from a $3.5 million Hemi Cuda convertible to a $100,000 clone.
True.
It went from a Le Mans GT, which there's not a real strong market for,
right,
it, to a car that looks
maybe
like one but performs better than that. So maybe I don't think there's any monetary difference here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say like a $12,000 to $15,000 car either way.
Well, I mean, I think, obviously, depending on condition.
Yeah,
I mean, I
haven't seen the car up close.
Right. The car is nice. And I know he's got more than that into it. But his investment, I think, is all in the right direction. He likes the car.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoys driving it. Wanted it to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think I don't know what he paid for it, but he didn't pay you know, $1 billion for the car. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not rendered worthless by this information.
Absolutely not. Right.
It's just,
it's certainly, if nothing else, it makes for a really cool story that he can tell people.
Right. Now, if this was yours, what story would you tell?
Well, I don't, if I thought I was buying a genuine Le Mans GT, I would probably be kind of bummed at myself because I didn't do the research and I got duped. And that would be on me. Other than that, I think it would be kind of a cool story. Like, this car was copied from a fantasy car that was built in Hot Rod Magazine. Somebody saw that and made this car the same kind of car to mimic that.
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You could also say this is one of two in the world.
One of two in the world, and that's all I'm going to say. You know, I thought I was just buying a regular Le Mans GT. It turns out this is a one of two car.
Right. And the other one is owned by one of the greatest automotive photographers in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, he shot Cadzilla, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, to bring it all full circle.
Do it.
I plan on doing the same damn thing with Cadzilla.
Do you?
I'm going to clone that thing.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. I wonder if anyone will know.
Well, maybe I can get Randy to shoot it again. We'll aim it the other way. You and I can get a couple of clip-on beards.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. Grady will be Frank Beard, and then we'll have it all set.
Right, exactly. Now we'll put Trevor in there.
Oh, there you go. Trevor would make a great Frank Beard.
He would. He would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevzilla. Awesome.
Kevzilla, love it.
And when that happens, I'll let the owner of the Le Mans GT take it for a spin.
There you go.
And then all will be right with the world.
Oh, man.
Awesome. Well, I'll let you know how that comes out. Maybe I'll just play this for him.
There you go.
This explains the whole thing and kind of where I'm coming from. So if our friend the Le Mans GT owner ends up hearing this, you know where I'm at. Right?
Just press play and walk out of the room. Just let him do it. I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah. You know, maybe I can make a copy. He can listen to it in his Le Mans GT.
There's a couple beers in the fridge. You might want them. You might need them.
Right. Yeah, too cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's all in fun.
Yep.
One more quick little last thing that for those who listen to the show repeatedly, you and I had talked about our new distribution on the Alexa device.
Yes.
Last time, right?
Correct.
And I was dancing around saying, I got to be careful because you don't want to say Alexa commands, because I didn't want, if somebody was actually listening to Alexa, that have Alexa would stop the show or something.
Right.
Well, guess what happened?
Tell me. It stopped the show, didn't it?
You did, yeah. I commanded Alexa to play the V8 Radio podcast, and of course, Alexa starts playing, and then you and I are talking about Alexa, and you were going to tell Alexa to play the show again to help our numbers, if you remember that part. And you go, Alexa, and it stops.
That's awesome.
And the blue light spinning on top, yeah. And I come out of the bathroom, and I'm like, what happened?
Uh-oh.
And then Alexa stopped, and then all of a sudden it starts again, and it picked up where it left off, and I hear you go, Alexa, and then it stops.
Right on.
And we created the very infinite loop that we were talking about not creating.
Our numbers are going to skyrocket now.
Yeah, it's still doing it. I left it going in the room.
Perfect, perfect. I love that you're a team player like that.
Hey, do what I can.
Amen.
Everybody's Alexas, you know. It's interesting looking at the stats. People love your show, but they love 1.3 seconds of it. They just can't get enough of that section.
It's staggering.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's also staggering is the fact that people have listened this far into the episode and are anxiously awaiting our trivia questions.
Dig it. All right, Kevzilla. I asked you, I said, Kevin, what year was EFI first available on a U.S. car, and what brand, and the bonus, how many were made?
Right. And all wrong, by the way.
We were talking about the Autronic Eye on the Cadillac and all that good stuff, and you said, but I think there was something in the 50s. Like 1958.
I kind of think so.
Chrysler. And I swear you've been talking to Trevor because that's absolutely right. 1958 Chrysler. No, I'm not kidding you.
You are kidding me.
No, sir. It was called the Electrojector.
Oh, see, now that I did not know, but I love that. The Electrojector.
Yeah. And you were right with the less than 100 as well. There was 35 made.
Holy mackerel.
You are unbelievable. Trevor. Have you two been talking?
No, we have not. He's on vacation this week. He's not even here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he had told me that he came up with a trivia question or two that he was going to supply you with.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everybody feed me.
To give you a little bit more of that, we've got nothing even close to contextual of a 58 Chrysler Electrojection in our shop right now. I mean, we got a 63 Imperial, but that's a carbureted thing.
Sure.
So, like I said, I do remember reading about that a long time ago, but I didn't remember what it was called. Hot dog.
Hot dog. Well, it's funny that you mentioned in part of your answer the Bosch Jetronic.
Mm-hmm.
Chrysler didn't have a good time with this, and they ended up selling the patent to Bosch. And Bosch made it a marketable item.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, crazy, right?
I did not know that. That's pretty cool. So the Electrojector eventually became the precursor to the Jetronic.
Yes, sir.
I believe that Chrysler had a time with that thing because it was way too early.
Way too early, yeah.
Technologically to make that work, and hence 35 sold. And I bet all 35 got converted back to carburetors.
Pretty much. From what I read, absolutely.
That's fascinating. You lucky me.
Well done, man. Well done. I'm impressed.
All right, well.
I'm thoroughly impressed.
Well, thank you. So am I, as a matter of fact, because I did not expect that. Okay, so your question.
Yeah.
Once again.
And also, by the way, wrong once again.
Well, you got a 50-50 shot. You can, I don't know if you got it right or wrong the first time, but. The short version is, what is the retracting rear window of 63 through 68 Mercury's called?
Wait, is it a retracting window?
Well, the... Because
you asked me why it was
slanted
like that.
I said it sloped away from the car. Yeah. Number one was Y, and then B, what was it called?
Yeah.
So Y, yes, it retracted. So you got that right. See? How about that?
How about that?
And then the name...
You're really going with that, okay.
I think it's a great name. It's the Great Retractable Rear Window by Mercury, of course. Reminds me of the Buick slogan, the Great American Road Belongs to Buick, right?
Yeah. And the Great Retracting Window belongs to Mercury.
That's right. Well, it's actually called the Breezeway.
The Breezeway. That's right. The Breezeway. Now, I do remember now that you said that.
That's usually how it goes.
Yeah, pretty much. Gosh.
I now know the answer since you've told me the answer.
Yeah. I mean, but, I remember you telling it to me before. Ah, geez.
But that was just the part B. I mean, you got the A part. You got the big part that it retracted. So that's a win.
Good stuff.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? That's a rare air indeed.
Yeah. I can't believe I got that 58 Chrysler right.
That was amazing.
That is amazing. I'm not one to blow my own horn, but I'm pretty damn surprised.
As you're saying it, I'm trying my best to keep a straight face and hoping that you're not looking at the camera when you're talking about it. I'm like, son of a... No, he can't do this to me.
Yeah, well, what do they say? A stopped clock is flat on two sides. And that's what is it? A flat tire is right twice a day? Or?
Yeah. God dang it.
All right. Well, that's cool. Ending on a high note.
Yeah. Nicely done.
So I will let you know what our Le Mans GT owner happens to say.
Yeah, for sure.
When I plam your story.
We'll have to have a follow-up episode on this.
Yeah. And a little teaser for next time. Next time we're going to talk about the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals.
Oh, snap.
Because the actual show was canceled, but we've got something that is, I'm going to say, almost equally as cool on hand for Muscle Car fans. So that's our teaser for our next episode.
Nice. Can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. Mm-hmm. And we will go from there. So make sure that you subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Help us go after the deceased gentlemen that do car talk.
Beat the rear ends. They still beat the pants off of us.
Oh, yeah. We're getting a little better over there, but we'll see. And then, of course, Google Play. They've got a new interface, I think, that's coming out. Podbean, Podtrack, Spotify. Stitcher. I used Spotify at the that Scottsdale Off-Road Expo.
Is that right?
Yeah, Spotify Premium.
Oh, nice.
You can download your whole playlist of music and not have to use the...
Yeah, thing. That's cool. Yeah, I used to have the Spotify Premium a long time ago until we became a iTunes family, and then I had to quit it.
Yep. So Spotify also carries the podcast, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Amazon. You can go tell your friend Alexa to, Alexa, turn on the V8 Radio podcast now and turn it up.
Alexa, do it now.
See how that goes. All right, man. Well, this was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
I appreciate the time. And for Mr. Mike Cuball Clark, I'm Kevin Oste, reminding you to, I got to get a new phrase at the end of this.
Let's see. No more keep the shiny side up. Keep it under 100.
Keep it between the ditches. Keep it over 100. Keep it over. Yeah, that's right, between the ditches. That's right.
Keep it at 331 miles an hour.
At least as you enjoy your Tuatara and have a Rinko Cephalian day
Ooh.
From your friends here at VA Radio.